Parshas Vayakel, Vayakel Pekudei, which is the double parsha which we read this week, is the closing of the Meleches Binyan HaMishkan, of the actual construction of the Mishkan itself. And as you know, Vayakel Pekudei is largely, although not completely, a repetition of that which was found before in Parshas Truma, Parshas Tetzaveh, where Moshe Rabbeinu was given the commandments about how the Mishkan should be constructed. Here in Parshas Vayakel and Pekudei, we have a repetition of that in the context of the Mishkan being rebuilt, being built, being made. So everything is again described in similar painstaking detail in the context of the actual carrying out of all which had been commanded earlier. Now, there are a couple of significant differences, and Bezos Hashem, God willing, we will dwell on them as we progress in our discussion of the Mishkan. But let's first take a step back, and hopefully, Bezos Hashem, the general goal of what we're going to talk about tonight is an understanding of the Mishkan, of this tabernacle, of this temple, and how it was constructed in the context of the Bria, in the context of the world as a whole, and perhaps the lessons or the insights which can be derived from how the Parsha, how the Torah describes this construction, and the way it is described, and how that perhaps could shed light and insight onto the Bria Kula, onto the world as a whole. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos, Daf Nun Hei, the Gemara says, Amrav Yudam Arav, Yodea Hoya Bitzalel, Litzaref Osios Shenivru Ben Shamayim Vaoretz. Bitzalel had the ability and the knowledge to combine the letters through which heaven and earth were created. What does this mean? Well, when God created heaven and earth, Vayomer Elokim, right? God said, let there be light, let there be this, let there be that. And the way Chazal, the way our sages expressed themselves, that there were certain combinations of letters, not just the he or let there be light that we read, right? But there are certain combinations of letters using the names of God, whatever all that means in some mystical sense, that by their utterances, reality could be created. And Bezalel somehow, says the Gemara, had that ability. How do we know? So the Gemara goes on to cite a pasuk, that it says, Vayimale oso ruach elokim b'chachma uvisfuna uvidas. It says, Bezalel, it's described that Bezalel was filled with the ruach elokim, with the spirit of God, with chachma, tfuna, and das, which loosely translated three terms for knowledge. Three different terms for knowledge. So b'chachma would be wisdom, and tfuna is understanding, and das is knowledge. That's generally speaking the way, you know, loosely again, it is translated. B'chachma b'tfuna v'das, Bezalel was filled with that. And says the Gemara, we find other verse which says that b'dato tohomos nifku'u, Hashem b'chachma yisad eretz, konen shamayim b'tfuna, b'dato tohomos nifku'u, Hashem made the earth with chachma, and the heavens with tfuna, with understanding, and the depths, the watery depths, with das. So we see that the description of the various components of the world use these three elements of wisdom. That's how Hashem made the world. And we're using these very same tools for Bezalel in his creation of the Mishkan. Says the Gemara, so you see Bezalel had Hashem's tools. There's another element of what the Gemara is saying over here, which is a critical element, and an element which is very, very basic and almost ubiquitous in Jewish thought about the Mishkan, which is that in the Mishkan, in this small building, this building which was, you know, about less than 1,200 square feet, the tabernacle, the Mishkan, there was somehow distilled and compressed Shamayim Va'aretz, heaven and earth. That all of the elements of the broader, greater universe which we find around were somehow represented there in the Mishkan. The Mishkan brought together all of these things. why do I say it's ubiquitous in the thought about in Jewish thought about the Mishkan? Well, first of all, this is an example. Bezalel had all of the wisdom of making heaven and earth that he employed in the building over here of the Mishkan. We know that we all have a mitzvah to keep the Shabbos, a mitzvah which, parenthetically, and hopefully we will have a chance to discuss this, a mitzvah which finds its way regularly into the instructions about the Mishkan. In last week's Parsha, Parshas Kisisa, after the general discussion of the building of the Mishkan is concluded, so we have a very long instruction about maintaining the observance of Shabbos, because on that day Hashem rested from his work. Parshas Vayakil. This week's Parsha begins with Sheishes Yomim Tiyasem Alochu Vayam Ashvi Yelachem Kodesh Shabbos Shabbosom Lashem. So the Gemara derives from the relationship of the mitzvah of Shabbos to the mitzvah of building the Mishkan that this really provides us with the definition of the mitzvah of Shabbos. What's the mitzvah of Shabbos? We're not supposed to do work on Shabbos. How is that defined? How do we understand what is Shabbos and what is melacha for Shabbos? What isn't melacha for Shabbos? What is the work? What isn't the work of Shabbos? Says the Gemara, well, anything which was in the Mishkan, it constitutes melacha, constitutes work. So the Gemara, right, we learn Masechta Shabbos now, some people might be learning the Daf Yomi, right, Masechta Shabbos, so always the prototype for defining what is forbidden work on Shabbos is finding an example of it in the Mishkan. If this was done in the construction of the temple, it's forbidden on Shabbos. Now on Shabbos, as we know, speaking, taking a step back, broadly, philosophically, where all forms of creative labor are forbidden. Hashem created the world in 6 days, and he rested from that creation on the seventh. And that's the paradigm for our keeping of Shabbos, which means all the creative labors which went into building the world ceased with Hashem, they ceased with us. Where are they found? Where are all the creative labors that go into the building of a world found? They're found in the Mishkan. There's nothing that Hashem, so to speak, made with the world that's not represented in the Mishkan. It's all there. It's all there. The Mishkan is a distillation into one building, one context, one project of all the creative energies and possibilities that exist in the universe. Chazal say, if we find it in similar things, where the Chazal tell us that, you know, the Mishkan's roof was a series of mats, of woven mats, that were sewn together, five and five, and then five and six, narrow mats that were woven together, and then the two sets of five mats, five which went over the front, and five which were draped over the back half, and going down the back of the Mishkan, right, they were connected with lulaos and krasim. Lulaos are loops, and krasim are hooks. The hooks were made out of gold, the bottom ones. So the Gemara says that the krasim bilulaos, the hooks in the loops, appeared like kochavim barakia, like stars in the heaven. So even on that level, on some level, standing in the Mishkan, you have a microcosm, a small version. You have a planetarium, right? You got heaven and earth. It's all there. It's all there, standing inside the Mishkan. The world in a box. The Gemara, the same Gemara in Maseches Brachos, same page, says another story, another explanation about Bezalel. Bezalel, the word Bezalel, broken up into two, means Bezalel, Kael. Bezalel in the shadow of Kael, of the God, of the Divine. Where does this name come from? So the Gemara explains the following. As we mentioned, Vayakil Pekudei is almost a reiteration of Truma Tetzaveh. In Truma Tetzaveh, which we had the parshas of 2 weeks ago, of 3 weeks ago, we have the outline of the instructions about the building of the Mishkan. And in Parshas Vayakil Pekudei, we have the actual building of that Mishkan. And there's an important difference in sequence, which you notice when you read the two separate accounts. In Truma, Moshe Rabbeinu, in recording his commandments from Hashem, starts with the building of the Aron, of the Ark, for the Luchos, for the tablets, and of the Menorah, and the Shulchan, the various instruments, the various pieces of quote-unquote furniture, ritual objects which filled the temple, and then he gets to the superstructure. He gets to the description of the walls and the curtains last. In today's parsha, in Vayakhel, it starts with the building of the structure of the house, and then it comes to the building of the utensils, of the things which went inside the house. So the Gemara says that this issue, this question, this change in the order, was the subject of some issue, of some question or confusion between Moshe and Bezalel. What's that? B'shosh Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. When God spoke to Moshe and he said, Lech emor lo leBetzalel, go tell Betzalel, asei li mishkan aron v'kelim. Hashem told Moshe, and this is derived from a verse in last week's parsha, which is the verse that brings it together. He told Moshe, tell Betzalel to build the building and then make the ark and the other implements, the other instruments of the temple. Holach Moshe. So Moshe Rabbeinu went. V'hafach. And he switched things around. Edited. V'omar lo, and he said to Bezalel, "Asay aron v'kelim u'mishkan, make the ark, make the other instruments, and build the building." He gave him a different sequence. Omar lo, so Bezalel turned to Moshe, and he said, "Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe my teacher, min hago shel olam, what's the way of the world? Adam bo nebayis v'achar kach machnis l'socho kelim. Normally, a person builds a house, and then they put in the furniture, right? Imagine, right? You're having a house built, and the first thing you do is you go to Carpets Unlimited, and you say, do me a favor, please, I want 11 by 15 over here, and come Monday morning. And they come, and they bring all the carpets, and they come to a muddy, to a muddy lot, right? You have your dining room set. So he says, Kalim. You tell me I should build all the furniture and then make the building. Where am I going to put them? Where am I going to put all these kelim? Where am I going to put all this furniture that I'm making? Doesn't make sense. So Bezalel said, maybe God told you the other way. Maybe he told you build the building and then do it. Maisha, you know, maybe you made a mistake here. Maybe you did something different. Omar lo, so Maisha said, Shema Bezalel Kel HaYisav Yodata. You must have been there in the shadow of God. That's Bezalel, Bezalel Kel, in the shadow of the divine, in the shadow of God. You must have been there hiding in the wings. And that's how you know. How else do you know? You're a clever guy. You must have been standing there in the corner by Hashem, and that's how you know. That's how Bezalel got his name. Now, this Gemara is an enigmatic Gemara. Why? Because you don't have to be, if the logic is as simple as he says, you don't have to be standing in the shadow of the divine to figure that out. Virtually anybody would figure that out, right? Where are you going to put the kelim? So we have to realize that Bezalel is not offering a practical argument over here for obvious reasons, otherwise Moshe wouldn't have been so effusive in his compliment. But Bezalel's argument, in fact, was not practical. Why? Because, you know, the Mishkan was constantly in existence without walls. It was a traveling building that was meant to be taken apart and put back together and traveled with. And so the Jewish people better have had a system for keeping the furniture without a house. It was very, very obvious that they must have had some kind of a system. Bezalel's argument over here is not simply practical. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make the Oren. I will not know where to put it. Bezalel's argument is, as he says, min hago shel olam. This is the way of the world. The way of the world, when people normally do things, they follow this sequence. They build the house, and then they put in the cable. Then they put in the furniture. And I should follow min hago shel olam. I should follow the way of the world. I don't need to. in this specific case, it may be very, very feasible to do it otherwise. But shouldn't I be making this according to the way of the world? The Mishkan is not a singular project. The Mishkan is representative of the way the world works, the way the world is constructed, the way generally things are done. And how are things generally done? You build the Mishkan, and then you furnish it. You furnish it. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Bitzalel, you are indeed very, very wise. Bitzel Kel Hayisa, Yodata. You must have been in the shadows there to realize that specifically this is what we're trying to do. That we're trying to do something specifically according to the nature of the world. Building within the context of the world. Almost building the world in micro, in building the Mishkan. That is very perceptive, Bitzalel. Now, why did Moshe change the order? Why did Moshe make it different? Why did Moshe put the Aron before anything else? So the Ramban says, an obvious explanation. Ramban says it in his introduction to Truma. Moshe Rabbeinu put the Aron first because what was the Mishkan being made for? It was being made for the Aron. It was being made for this. The Mishkan is the Mishkan HaEdos. It's the temple, the tabernacle of the Eidos, of the testimony. What is the testimony? The testimony are the Luchos HaEdos, the tablets of testimony to Hashem's encounter with the Jewish people. The Mishkan was built for this. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, make an Aron, make an ark. That's what this whole building is for. It's for that place, that container, above which Hashem's presence will be visible amongst the Jewish people. So that's the way Moshe Rabbeinu idealizes it. But when it comes to actually, practically carrying it out, the derech, the way, is build it first, and then fill it with kelim, then fill it with utensils. Now, it's interesting, I think, for us to go back, in fact, to the building of the world, to see what model Hashem actually followed when he built the world. Did he follow the model of Moshe Rabbeinu? Or did he follow the model of Bitzalel? If you look in Parshas Bereishis, in the beginning of it all, the beginning of the Torah, so we have a description of the Sheshes Yemei Bereishis, of the 6 days of creation. In the 6 days of creation, the very first statement of creation is Hashem created the heaven and the earth, which is, for our purposes, the building. And then he created, and the first thing he did was he put in the electrical, right? He put in the lights. The next thing he did was he put in the plumbing, right? He separated he separated the waters, and he made the vegetation grow. And then he put in the sun and the moon and the stars, and he brought the things, the plants, and the animals, and the birds, and the fish, and finally, the people into the world. The Ribbono Shel'Olam followed, it seems, what we would consider a very, very natural sequence, Minhago Shel Olam, the way of the world, the method, the approach of Bitzalel. But as you know, there are actually two accounts of creation. The first account of creation, the famous one, the one which we just reviewed very quickly, extemporaneously. But we find also a second account of creation. Second account of creation comes after Shabbos, after the description of Shabbos, which we find in Parshas Bereishis, where it says, Eila todas Hashemayim v'aretz bi'boram. These are the happenings of the heaven and earth when they were created on the day Hashem made earth and the heaven. The pasuk describes, V'chol siach hasada terem yibhoretz, V'chol esev hasada terem yitzmach. The plants, the trees were not yet there. Ki lo himtir Hashem elokim hala oretz, V'odam ayin lavodes ha'adam. The furniture wasn't there yet. The plants weren't there. Why? Because man wasn't there yet. So what does it say? So it says, Hashem, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim Es Adam Afar Min Ha'Adama. Hashem created man, Afar Min Ha'Adama, dust from the earth. He blew into him the spirit of life, and man was alive. And then, says the Pasuk, Hashem planted a gan, a garden, in Eden, Mikedem, and he put there the man that he created. Vayatzmach Hashem Elokim Min Ha'Adama, and then he sprouted from the earth, Kol Eitz Nechmad Lamara, V'Tov Lamachol, all types of trees. Rivers came out of Eden. Animals, birds are brought to Adam, to Gan Eden. It's a very, very different sequence. In fact, it's almost an inverted sequence. Whereas in the first account of creation, everything is created, the entire world is developed, all other beings are made, and then man is brought in. In the second account of creation, man is created, then his home is created, and filled in, and worked on, and developed, after he's already there. It's not precisely, let's be precise, it's not literally the reversal of the Bezalel situation. We're not talking about furniture. But we're talking here about Adam. And the place where Adam himself is put in the order of things, in the order of creation. Where does Adam go? At the beginning or at the end? And there's a very, very big difference between the two situations. What's the difference? The difference is reflected in the mandate that occupies man in the world. If you look at the first order of creation, Adam is created, and it said man will be made, and he will be there to rule over all the animals and everything else that exists in the world. Man is the superior being. So man is born, and Hashem gives him a mitzvah. And he says, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, v'chivshua, and conquer it. The second version, man, is also given a mitzvah. Pruvu, umilu azaretz, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. However, he's never told to conquer the earth. In fact, he's put in Gan Eden, la'avdo l'shamra, to work it, to preserve it. It's his. The difference between the first account of creation and the second account of creation is that in the first account of creation, there's a world that exists for 5.5 days before God ever creates man. Man with the spirit of God within him that has the ability to redefine the world. When he creates him, he says, okay, man, I created a world, this world exists, you go and redefine it. You go and conquer it and make it in your own image. Your image is the image of God. God rules over the world. You go in there and rule over the world. Take it over. In the second account of creation, we don't have that. Man doesn't need to conquer the world. He doesn't need to take it over. In fact, he's the first one there. He's there when it's created. Hashem created the garden for the already existing Adam, for already existing man. He's there to welcome the trees, to welcome the animals, to give them names. They have no existence before he comes on the picture. He comes on the scene. What's the difference between the first story and the second story? What creation is the first story describing? What creation is the second story describing? The first story is describing the creation of the world. The second story is describing the creation of Gan Eden. The second story is Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden, paradise. The place where God walks through the garden, where God is spiritually visible everywhere.
That's not a place that has a life of its own before man and his soul and his spirituality and God's presence enters the world. Gan Eden starts off spiritual and indeed ends off spiritual. When man sins and compromises his nature, he gets an eviction notice. He's out of there. He can't stay. Where is he sent? To the rest of the world. The rest of the world, which has this method of construction. A world which is created without man, without an active, vivid, visible presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam within it. Darkei Shel Olam, the way of the world, Minhago Shel Olam, Derech Eretz, right? The usual method, the usual way of doing things, the way of the world. The way of the world is reflected in the natural, actual creation. It's not reflected in the theoretical, idyllic, paradise type creation of Gan Eden. That creation doesn't follow normal sequence. When Moshe Rabbeinu describes the picture of the Mishkan, he describes the Aron, the Ark, the place where Hashem's presence will be shown. Everything else is built afterwards. Everything else is there to create the shell and the context for the presence of Hashem. In actual fact, though, the building of the Mishkan is done by the method of the building of the world. Is done by the method of the building of the world, Darkei Shel Olam, Minhago Shel Olam, the way of the world, natural, normal construction. That's the goal of the Mishkan. Let's do a little more to clarify. We have a fact of life, which the Torah describes at the end of Parshas Noach. It says that Yeter Lev HaAdam Ra Min Urav. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm not going to destroy the world anymore. I destroyed it once in the Mabul in the flood. I'm not going to destroy it again. Why? Because the inclination of the heart of man is Ra, is bad, evil, Min Urav, from his youth. The sages go so far as to say Min Urav is from the first moment that he shakes loose, from Min Sheninar Lotzeis Mimei Imo. As soon as the child begins exiting from the mother's womb, that's when already the child is imbued with the Yetzer Hara, with an evil inclination. Right? The Sfarim explain because he can't stay confined anymore. Right? He's got to leave. He's got to burst out. That's the expression of the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination that knows no bounds, knows no limitations, starting with the limitations of being contained within another human being. But from the very youth of man, from the beginning of man, there's a Yetzer Hara. What does that mean? You know, the innocence of children? What does that mean? Well, the way that translates is that people start. Innocence or no innocence, how cunning or how simple and naive and pure children are is hardly the point. The point is that children begin, we all of us begin our lives with a sensitivity to one thing. Our bodies. Food, breakfast, right? Whether it's at 3 o'clock in the morning or at 9 o'clock in the morning, right? That's the beginning of every human being. A child, a baby, knows only where the food is coming from. It takes a while for the baby to even realize that it's not just the actual source of the food, but there's a person there, and that there's an environment which goes beyond it. But the child is a completely selfish being. drawing from others for itself. Completely and totally. Completely and totally parasitic in its existence. And even as the child grows more and more, still, by and large, its sensitivities are still rooted very, very much in the physical. The Rambam, in his introduction to the 10th perek, to the perek chelek, 11th perek of Sanhedrin, so he writes about he uses it really as a metaphor, but for how one, pedagogical tools, how one educates a child. So he says, you know what, you're going to go to a child, you're going to tell them, you should learn Torah, you should study Torah, you should get yourself an education, because you have no idea the importance of a good education. Right? You tell that to your 5-year-old, go to kindergarten, learn A, B, C, right? Your 7-year-old, go to school and learn how to read and write, because, when you're older, if you know how to read and write, and if you develop an appetite for reading, you'll be a more intelligent person. And the child will look at you and go outside and play basketball. Right? Says the Rambam, you want to get the child to learn, don't try to give it to them because of those kind of motives. You tell the child, you go and learn. Baseball glove. And when he gets a little bit older, you say, go and learn because if you learn for 3 months, you'll do it. I'll get you a nice tie or a nice dress or something like that. And you get a little bit older, and you say, okay, I'm going to get you your car. And you get a little bit older, and you say, I'll give you covet. I'll give you respect. Or I'll give you money. Or something like that. And says the Rambam, hopefully, eventually, the person grows to a point where you can actually tell them, you know why you should do it? Because it's valuable. Not for any reason other than it. Don't do this for that. Do this for this. That's when you've made it. But the description, says the Rambam, is of a person whose tastes start off and whose motivators start off very, very base. And they get more sophisticated, and as they get more sophisticated, they get a little bit more subtle, and a little bit more away from the body, to the point where you could even have covet, which the Rambam has a very good thing there, honor. People would sacrifice all kinds of physical pleasure for the pleasure of honor, for being given covet, for being given honor. But it's still very, very much all coming from the ra. And it gets less and less ra, to the point where we find that, all the Avais, not all the Avais, but the Avais blessed their children on their deathbed. Moshe Rabbeinu blessed his children on his deathbed. Why? Because as a person gets older and older, in the words of Barzilai HaGiladi, he no longer is enmeshed in physicality. The spirit is more dominant as the body weakens and wanes. And then the person finally somehow approaches spirituality, so they're the most equipped to give a divine blessing. But we start off ra. We start off ra. Ra doesn't mean evil. The Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Hara, right? We used this translation of the evil inclination. Ra means mundane. That's the way Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato really translates it. Ra means what we know as physicality, material. The inclination of man from the beginning is purely materialistic. There's no spirituality in there. Spirituality has to be cultivated over life. What every human being has to do in the microcosm of their self, of their own life, of their own person, is a small version, which often seems like a gigantic and humongous version of the kifshua, of conquering it. Ezel Gibar, who is the mighty person, Hakovesh es Yitzro, a person who conquers this Yetzer, which the world starts, which every human being starts with. Ramin Uraf, we're born with an inclination. And as we grow, hopefully, we're able to conquer that inclination. So that the supreme motivation in our lives is not that, but the spiritual, the more meaningful, the more lofty. That's the goal. That's what has to be developed. That's minhago shel olam. That's the way of the world. You know, there's only one human being, maybe two, that didn't go through this experience. Well, Adam Arishon, when Adam Arishon was born, was he born with a Yetzer which was Ra Min Urav, an evil inclination from the beginning? No. Adam Arishon was the creature of Gan Eden. He was born the other way around. He was born with only a good inclination. The snake had to convince him to do something wrong, right? We wish we needed a snake to tempt us to do something wrong. We got it all built in, right? We have the internal mechanism for the Yetzer Hara. Adam Arishon didn't have it. He gave it up. He brought it in. Internally, he was born fine. The negative stuff, the other stuff, came later. These are the two pictures of man that correspond to the two pictures of the world. And the real world, the world the way we know it, the world which we were born into, is the world of Adam Arishon la'achar hachet, Adam Arishon after he sinned, which is the world of the first and most famous of the accounts of creation, where Hashem creates heaven and earth and grass and plants and animals, and all of these things exist. And man has to come in and take them over and conquer them. And he's not going to do it in an instant. Because when he comes into this world which exists separate from him, he's got to first somehow get to know the law of the jungle. And he gets absorbed in the law of the jungle before he somehow is able to transcend it and raise it up and conquer it to be on his terms. That's minhago shel olam. Minhago shel olam is that the nature that we start with is one, and we have to build into it sanctity. We have to build into it spirituality, the maturity of spirituality, to take over, to disengage from pre-existing patterns, from where we started, from our anchor, from our beginnings, and create and even impose new values and new sources of motivation and a sense of direction that wasn't there previously. Ideally, we wouldn't have that. Ideally, we would say, okay, you know, start off good and infect everything else. Everything will be built into that context. Make the Aron first, make the Ark first, and then everything is built as the shelter around the Aron. But no, that's not minhago shel olam. The way of the world is, you build it first, and then you say, okay, what am I going to use this building? Let me put in an Aron, and transform the building from just a building into a building of the Aron, into a building that creates, that contains the Ark. It's a fundamentally different approach, a fundamentally different perspective, the perspective which we all live with. And the debate between Moshe and Bezalel was, when you build this sanctuary, is this sanctuary an exception to life? Or is this sanctuary the essence of life? Is this sanctuary, is this Mishkan going to be something which is Gan Eden? Which is, okay, you're going to break all the rules and say, let's start with just a spiritual image? Or is this Mishkan supposed to somehow be a microcosm of the transformation of the existing world into a world which now has the spirituality, the Aron, the Ark, representing that presence of Hashem, now comes into it and takes it over and conquers it and makes it into something different. I think this is reflected as well in another difference, which is clearly parallel between the story of Bereshis and our story. And you may have noticed it. You may have noticed it in just when I was reading over that story. What's the bridge between the first chapter's story of creation and the second chapter's story of creation? The story of Shabbos. The story of Shabbos is clearly the seventh day of creation. Vayichal Elokim bayom hashvi. Hashem finished on the seventh day. But it doesn't end vayera vayivoker yom hashvi. The Mishkan was a little heaven and earth. Not just it was the United Nations, you know, you got a little bit of Portugal and a little bit of Zaire all together in one building. It was there because the true definition of the world as a place which is created and has Hashem's presence, God's presence, come to fill it. The true definition of the world was lost in the world. We failed the challenges. We were instinctive. And we did not welcome Hashem into that world. So, what's left? Only one place into which Hashem can be welcomed. Only one place where Hashem's presence can come in and conquer and take it over. And that's the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the little bit of the universe which is reaching its potential, which is the universe as the place of Hashem's residence. V'asu li migdash, and they shall make for me a temple, v'shachanti b'tzaycham, and I will dwell in their midst. My presence should come there. Not the way it was meant to be. As we learned, when Hashem gave the Jewish people the Torah, He said, any place, b'chol ha'mokom asher askir eshmi, everywhere I'll come. Wherever my presence will be welcome, I'll fill it, not in one specific place. But we narrowed it down to one specific place because the world remained unconquered. The world remained unconquered. And only the Mishkan is that portion of the world which the Jewish people have to conquer. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Bezalel, how do you know to follow the way of the world? Bezalel Kela Yisav Yodata, you must have been in the shadow of the divine to realize that if we make this Mishkan in a way which is counter to the way of the world outside, then we're not even salvaging anything of the world. Because what this Mishkan is lies in the Mishkan the potential that really lay in the entire universe to take something which starts off plain, simple, secular, devoid of Hashem's presence and infuse it into it. If you would follow my plan, says Moshe Rabbeinu, you know what you'd be making? You'd be making Gan Eden. You'd be making paradise. You'd be making a place which starts off with Hashem's presence. And people would say, ah, if you start off with God's presence, you can have a spiritual place. But this, rest of the world, forget it. It's irredeemable, it's doomed. It started off secular, it ain't going no place. Bezalel said, this is the way heaven and earth were made. Hashem made heaven and earth, shamayim, aretz, plants, animals, no semblance of the image of God anywhere. Till in the end, man came in, B'Tselem Elohim, Shabbos came in, and that was able and meant to leave its imprint, to take over creation. You know what Chazal tell us? The real reason why it doesn't say Vayera Vayivaker Yom Hashvi, and it was evening and it was morning, the Shabbos day. Because it was evening and it was morning. The Shabbos day means it was evening and it was morning. And it was finished. The first day ended after the first day, and the second day ended after the second day. The Shabbos day was meant to be open-ended. The Shabbos came, the blessing, the sanctity, take it over. Yoim Shekulo Shabbos. We say it in the benching every Shabbos, right? Hashem Harachaman, the merciful one who Yamchilenu, should make our portion the day Shekulo Shabbos Umnucha. That's all Shabbos. The Shabbos never ends. The Shabbos comes in and takes over. Conquers the world. Not an anchor to start, so that everything else afterwards is going to be tinged by spirituality. It can come in where no spirituality existed before and take it over and conquer it and reformulate it. And we can do that with the world, and we can do that with ourselves. Yetzer lev adam ra min urav. We all start off disinclined to spirituality. We all start off with only one recognition and only one sense of direction. Yetzer ra min urav, material, physicality, what our stomach asks for, what we want. That's where we all start. But the avoda, the minhaga shel olam, is to fill that void, to fill that space, to fill that building with the Aroin Ha'edos, with the Ark, with the Neshama, with the soul, to take it over, to say that even if we started off so mundane, but we can be changed, we can be developed, we can turn into something else. The Zayar says, I'll close with this, the Zayar says that when Noach was born, so his father said, Noach, he's going to Zeyinach Ameinu Mimaseinu Mitzvon Yedeinu. Noach is going to heal the world from all the pain that was brought in as a result of the curse of Adam. Why? Why did he say that? Right? Suddenly Noach is born and he makes this prediction. So he said, because Noach was born circumcised. He was born, he didn't need a bris. He was born holy. He was born already developed spiritually. Ah, like the good old days. That's what's going to heal the world. Did Noach heal the world? Noach didn't heal the world. The world was destroyed in Noach's time. And Noach himself went down a path. Who healed the world? Who, the 10 generations from Noach till Avram, the world wasn't destroyed. Avram healed the world. Avram is the father of the world. He bore the world. The world exists because of him. What was Avram? Avram was very much born needing a bris milah, needing circumcision. Avram Avinu needed development. Avram was born plain. Mitchila ov de'avodah zarah ayu avoseinu. He was born into a pagan family. He himself was an idol worshiper in the beginning. And then he changed. Then he worked to develop himself, to insert spirituality and a different modus operandi, a different set of motivations, a different perspective, a different presence into something that started off very mundane and very distant and very foreign. That's what saved the world. That's what built the world. That's the method of Binyan HaMishkan. Our sages tell us that the Beis HaMikdash of the future will explode and expand to fill the entire universe. That's the notion. The Mikdash as a microcosm of the world, of what it's supposed to be, a world filled with the presence of Hashem, not just a building filled with the presence of Hashem. For now, for them, it was only a building. Ultimately, when we withstand the challenges, it becomes truly Meloich Ol Haaretz Kevayda, that the whole world shall again become filled with the presence of Hashem, the way it was originally meant to be and the way it's in all of our hands to accomplish.